Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, here we are. It is 2017. A new president will be taking office soon. And what are we in for? And how are the Republicans doing so far now that they are in control of the House and the Senate and things are underway? Let's touch base with our favorite Democratic strategist. Brad Bannon is the president of Bannon Communication Research and a Democratic strategist. He works in campaigns like this. He deals with this kind of aftermath. Brad, welcome back to the podcast and Happy New Year to you.
Thanks, Paul. It's always great to be on.
So let's kind of go with you know, the beginnings here. The new Congress underway, and it looked like the first thing they were going to do to kick it all off was wipe out an independent ethics council that would take a look at allegations made against congressmen. Let's just get rid of that piece. And, well, Paul Ryan wasn't too happy about it. Kevin McCarthy, majority leader, wasn't happy about it. They were going to proceed. And then Donald Trump tweeted, essentially going, what are you people doing? He never said that was wrong. He just goes, there's more important things. They backed off. From your perspective, what was this all about?
Well, I think it shows a couple of things. I think it shows, first of all, that some Republican members of Congress are feeling their oats and they felt they could do anything. But as you said, Donald Trump chimed in against the move to essentially neuter the Congressional Ethics Commission. Paul Ryan decided that it was also a bad idea, and it was because it got so much bad publicity right after they did it that Paul Ryan decided he was going to lay down the law and tell them not to do it. But it makes you kind of, which was, you know, they corrected him. It was a bad mistake, but they corrected it quickly. Trump was smart to jump on this thing. He basically said, well, I may not, you know, you guys need to be ethical, which is odd considering his administration is plowing ahead with all sorts of conflicts of interest. I think it makes you wonder how much control Paul Ryan has over the situation. Republican caucus members went ahead and did this thing, apparently without his permission, and he had to intervene in the last minute to stop it. So it made me wonder how much control that Paul Ryan actually has over the Republican caucus.
Well, especially because he did sort of indicate he wasn't for this. And then by this morning, or I should say by the morning they were going to talk about this, he seemed to get warmer to the idea, probably because he didn't want to upset the caucus. Do we see a battle ahead between Paul Ryan and Donald Trump? I mean, are these guys going to work together closely, do you think? Or I don't really think they like each other very much, but is it a marriage of necessity?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of bad blood left over from the campaign. And I think there's going to, Trump and Ryan are going to have a rocky relationship. There are a lot of issues that Trump is way out of sync with Paul Ryan on. First of all, Paul Ryan called for an investigation of the Russian tampering in the 2016 election, something that Trump very much wants to avoid. Most Republican members of the Congressional Caucus want free trade, including Paul Ryan, but Donald Trump is adamantly opposed to any new trade agreements. So I think there's a lot of potential for conflict between Paul Ryan and Donald Trump, and the reality is they don't like each other very much.
As we look at the agenda for the first 100 days, and again, the you know, of course, these podcasts, we tape them, and things change just on a moment's notice. So I'm sure that one of the early pieces that is going to happen, they're already, they're talking about Obamacare, talking about getting rid of it. And yet, at this point in time, there is no replacement for it. They talk about some ideas, and now they talk about saying, I've heard some Republican congressmen say, it may take us about 3 years before we come up with something. So I guess I have two questions. What have you been doing for the last X number of years that you've been unhappy about this and never seem to have a place to go to replace it with. I mean, after all, had they created something that was workable, maybe the president would have allowed them to do some kind of repeal and replacement with something that he felt was more workable. So they never really had anything. They don't seem to have anything now, but they say they'll have it in 3 years. Does that mean it's another symbolic repealing of the Affordable Health Care Act, which the president will sign, but then nothing happens?
Well, yeah, that's a major problem facing the president-elect Donald Trump and the Speaker Paul Ryan, because it's very easy to repeal Obamacare because now there's a clear Republican majority in the Senate. In the House, Republican senators only need 51 votes under reconciliation to abolish Obamacare. And, of course, Donald Trump will sign it. The problem is it's a lot more difficult to come up with an alternative than it is to abolish Obamacare. Because if you come up with an alternative, you have to fight through a Democratic filibuster in the Senate, which would be very hard to break. So I think Paul Ryan wants to have a grace period of 3 years so they can phase out Obamacare instead of repealing it outright. The only problem Ryan has, there are a lot of very conservative members of the House Republican leadership who just want to appeal Obamacare right now and get rid of it. The problem is that would be a political disaster because it would allow the insurance companies to basically, herd their customers, and it would eliminate all the protections in Obamacare against the healthcare insurance companies treating their customers like cattle. It would also abolish, essentially, healthcare insurance for 20 million Americans. And so what do you do with those people? So the Republican leadership wants to phase out Obamacare, but the conservative members of the Freedom Caucus don't care about the political implications. They just want to get rid of it now. So it's going to be a very tricky issue for Republicans.
Which is really
stunning.
While
they're in control of the House, House Republicans voted to repeal Obamacare something, 55 or 56 times. But they never once had a vote on a Republican alternative. And so that's a big problem for Republicans.
It's interesting that several states that actually are Obamacare states were among the states that went for Trump. I don't think that people were voting on the Obamacare issue. I think they were voting on the job issue. But Kentucky, West Virginia, where jobs are certainly of concern. But these are Obamacare states. And went Trump. So you have to wonder if you're right, if some of the hard-nosed folks who say we're going to repeal it, even though we don't have everything, it doesn't matter. That 20 million people number is a very common number it's thrown around. It's actually not the right number. It is 20 million people who did not have health care who do. But it is closer to 30 million people when you include the 10 million who had it and lost it and then came on to Obamacare. So really we're talking about impacting 30 million people. And it just astounds me to think that there would be any elected official of any party who would take the position, this doesn't work, it's not good, it needs to be going, it's just too bad that these people don't have insurance. I just don't see how anybody who's elected can ultimately have that in their mind. So be it. People just need to not have insurance.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think it would be a political disaster if they repealed Obamacare outright because, like you said, there are 30 million people who depend upon it. And if you throw them to the wolves, essentially, that is going to create chaos in the healthcare system. And it's interesting, if you look at the polls on Obamacare, that were conducted during the election campaign, a lot of people wanted to reform Obamacare, but very few voters wanted to repeal it. Most voters see there are some positive aspects to Obamacare, and so if it was repealed, that would be a public relations disaster because most Americans don't think it should be repealed. They think it should be reformed.
it would seem to me that the best way for the Republican-controlled Congress to go is to do what they were elected to do. They're all about jobs. They're all about the economy. So pass those tax cuts for everybody. Make everybody happy because we're cutting. It's going to create an incredible burden on the budget in terms of deficit. Let's put that aside for a moment. Give everybody the tax cuts they're looking for, and then, you know, Trump brings these jobs back a group at a time, company by company. But that at least allows them on these first days to look at the country and go, you see, you put us to work. This is what we're doing. We're putting more money in your pockets. We're working on jobs. You're going to love us.
Well, yeah, that would be absolutely the most sensible thing to do. But the problem is there are a lot of Republicans in Congress and the president to some extent who want a scorched earth policy. They basically want, you know, for instance, the president has said many times he's going to repeal some of President Obama's executive actions right away. President Obama issued an executive order to stop deportations of a certain group of undocumented immigrants. President Obama issued executive orders to strengthen environmental controls, and President Trump said he's going to repeal those executive orders, right away. And they should focus on the economics because that's really was the big issue in the campaign. People were dissatisfied with the slow growth of the economy. But I think they're going to get sidetracked on a lot of other issues that are political landmines like immigration and environmental policy.
If Republicans do what we just talked about, the tax cuts, they work on the jobs thing. I mean, look, they've got to be looking ahead to 2018 where those non-presidential election years are the ones where Congress often turns in the other direction, that the party in power gets a shellacking typically because they're not delivering on their promises.
Really have to look at the midterm elections.
And it looks to me, and say what you want about Trump, but it does look like at least in that regard he's got an eye on the ball. He talks about these other things, but he basically says through tweets, let's worry about the economy.
Well, yeah, I think that's very true. And you know, if you look at the national polls right now, Donald Trump's approval rating for his transition period was in the low 40% range, which is much lower than Barack Obama's transition rating when he became president, lower than George W. Bush's transition rating when he became president. And so in terms of public appeal, Trump has a lot of work to do because he is not nearly coming into his presidency as popular as the last two presidents. And one of the problems he has to deal with is I think this Russian hacking scandal has the potential to be Donald Trump's Clinton emails. It's a lingering sore that's not going away. And President Trump's attempts to say, oh, that's not really a problem, it's not cutting with the American public. And so he has to clear the deck on that because I think that has the potential to become a scandal just like Hillary Clinton's emails.
Yeah, he still does talk about having a press conference in the next period of time. We'll see if that happens. That issue obviously is going to be a big one, and I think you're right. That may be just a huge problem when you're trying to be Russia's best friend in this country.
Yeah, he needs to be very upfront about it. And the reality is there's a lot of evidence. Both the CIA and the FBI have stated categorically that there was Russian hacking in terms of affecting the 2016 election.
But remember, Trump says he knows stuff nobody knows.
Donald Trump has dismissed all these charges, even though they're coming from the FBI and the CIA. And if he doesn't get out in front of this issue quickly and deal with it, it's going to become a major problem throughout his administration because it's just not an issue that's going to go away because there are a lot of people out there who have evidence that it actually happened.
Right.
So cozying up to Vladimir Putin and denying that the Russians tried to interfere with the 2016 election is a non-starter and could cause major problems for President Trump.
Well, remember, he says he knows stuff nobody else does. So as soon as he tells us what that is, maybe we'll all say,
well, he's going to have to do a lot better than that because Americans want to know.
I agree with you. Before I let you go, let me just get your take. George W. Bush will be attending the inauguration. Hillary and Bill Clinton will be attending the inauguration. They're all going high when everything else went low. What's your sense? It'll be a peaceful affair, and they will all smile and do what they need to do?
Well, I think, personally, I think the Clintons are doing the right thing. It's former presidents almost always attend a new president's inauguration. And it's an important sign of continuity for our democracy. And it makes the statement, well, we obviously didn't want Donald Trump to be president, but believe we, you know, the democratic system calls for former presidents to argue for the legitimacy of the new regime because it's the continuity that keeps American democracy thriving. And so I think that Clinton's made the right call. I'm sure they're not really looking forward to the idea of being there, but they did the right thing in terms of preserving the traditions of American democracy.
I think it's important to, you're right, to make the statement about the peaceful transition of power. Brad Bannon, as always, a pleasure getting your insights. I'm sure we will talk again shortly after the inauguration so that we get your reactions to that, and then we'll see what kind of ride we're in for the next 4 years. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Paul. Always a pleasure.
Always. We'll see you on Politics Tonight soon as well. Thank you, Brad.
Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose. We'd fight and never lose, for we were young and sure to have our way.
Now, just before you start just singing the La La La's, which I know you want to do from that great song, Those Were the Days, I'm going to bring in my guest. So excited that he is performing back in Chicago for the first time in a very, very long time. We'll find out why that is and catch up more about him. And if you're not familiar with him, you should be, but I think you are. His name is Charles Bush. He is an entertainer. He is a playwright. He is an author. You may very well know him from his plays, The Divine Sister, Vampire Lesbians of Sodom, which ran in Chicago for about 300 years, The Tale of the Allergist Wife, which I'm sure you saw in Broadway and downtown theaters here in Chicago, the film Psycho Beach Party, which was great, and my personal favorite, it's where I fell in love with this guy, Die Mommy Die, and if you haven't seen that movie, you need to, because it is just an incredible film. I'll stop talking and welcome Charles Bush to the podcast. Hello, Charles.
Well, hey there. Thanks for having me on.
If people that don't know you, I don't know how to describe you. I mean, you're an entertainer, but sometimes we get you in drag, sometimes we don't. How do you describe who you are?
Oh, man, I can't describe it at all. It's a weird show, and it's a very odd career, but I'm count my blessings really just about every other day that I've had the career that I wanted. You know, well, I've done what I've enjoyed. But, yeah, no, it's odd because I'm, you know, I do all these different things, you know, but somehow there is a certain entertainment aesthetic that runs through, whether it's my cabaret performing or my playwriting. I am an entertainer. I guess I like a roller coaster of tone in everything I do. So it's you know, I can be, you know, sort of very outrageous and funny, people tell me, and but then I also like going for the heartstrings, and I like getting dramatic and emotional. And, so, yes, everything kind of.
And let me just talk for a moment. When I think of your films, like Psycho Beach Party, and again, my favorite, Die Mommy Die, I mean, your voice, the way you deliver lines, your facial expressions, and we see you in drag. I mean, that's your character throughout. It's absolutely incredible. But I have to say, then you juxtapose that to Tale of the Allergist Wife, which you wrote back in, I think, around 2000, which was a classic traditional Broadway show. So you really do it all.
I have a very creative imagination, and I get a lot of ideas. I get a lot, just about every day I come up with some new scheme, and I work hard. You know, I work 7 days a week, you know, as a writer, you know, because I love it. You know, it's not a discipline as much as an escape. So I guess it's not surprising that I get so many ideas that they come in different forms.
Right. And by the way, we also got you in case I used to love the HBO series Oz. You were in that for a couple
of
years.
Fun.
Oh, my God. What a great show that was. I need about 40 minutes to talk to you. We don't have it. So let's talk about why you're coming to Chicago after so long. It's a show called That Girl, That Boy. It's coming to the Pride Arts Center, two nights only, January 29th and January 30th. And I have to say, I'll say this and I'll say it later. If you don't have tickets yet, it could be sold out already, to be honest with you, because the tickets are going to go very fast. But check it out. Go to pridefilmsandplays.com and get tickets, because with this guy coming back for two nights only at Pride Arts Center, this is going to fill up fast. I'm looking forward to being there. So let me ask you, what led you decide to go with this? I think this is sort of a cabaret evening with you, right? Show?
Yes. Well, when you have a long career, you know, and I'm going back, you know, we're decades now, old brother. But you know, they're kind of different chapters of your career as you kind of morph from one thing to another. And for about the past 4 years or so, I've had this new career as a cabaret singer performer, and I'm just loving it. So, and I always wanted to tour in one of my plays. That was a great dream of mine. But my plays that I acted in, you know, really needed to be seen in more intimate theaters, you know, and they didn't. If you're going to do a national tour, you have to play big, huge houses, and it just wasn't suitable at all. So I never had that chance. But as a cabaret performer, when it's just myself and my accompanist Tom Judson, you know, we travel light. You know, so I've been really going all over. I think we've been in, you know, maybe 20 different American cities. We've played London, Paris. I mean, it's really been kind of wild and a marvelous thing for me to actually connect to audiences and meet them afterwards who've followed my career for you know, a very long time, because it's something that I always wanted to do. So this is neat, and I like the cabaret format right now. I love the intimacy. It's odd in that I'm performing in drag, looking like, you know, a kind of glamorous Tina Louise, you know, on Gilligan's Island, but I'm introduced as Charles Bush, and I really am myself, just telling true stories about my, you know, experiences and singing a collection of very beautiful songs by Sondheim, the Beatles, Jerome Kern, you know, Burt Bacharach, and it doesn't make great sense, but people like it, and I'm loving it.
Well, and if
you know, I think after what's odd is and interesting at the same time is that after all these years performing in drag, I'm just so comfortable with the androgyny within me, whether I'm that boy or that girl. It, you know, it's all the same, really. I just dial up. I guess my stage persona in drag is really who I am in real life. I just kind of dial it up a bit. I'm like an old Philco TV, you know. I just dial up the brightness and the contrast, and it's still me. I can be completely honest and Charles Bush, but still looking like a glamorous lady. Does that make sense at all?
Well, it does to me, because I'm a longtime fan, so I get it. And by the way, I should also tell people there was a documentary done about you called The Lady in Question is Charles Bush. So people, if you still want to know, if you're hearing this and you're going, I got to learn about this guy, for any reason you don't know, because really, what an incredible career. So it sounds to me like, if I heard you right, when we do see you on stage on January 29th and 30th at the Pride Arts Center, will you be in drag, or will you be a man? Wait, who are we seeing that day?
I will be. Let me look at the calendar. Now I will. I will be looking as lovely as I possibly can. Yes. No, I will be in drag. Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of. I'm looking forward to that, because you're an incredibly beautiful.
But, you know, it's fun. It's an interesting thing with me in drag too, because, you know, in my plays and movies, I'm able to, you know, I play an original character,
right,
you know, in each thing, a different character. And although I'm not doing impersonations, the lady that I play in Die, Mommy, Die, let's say, you know, evokes echoes of different actresses, whether it's Susan Hayward or you know, great actresses of the iconic movie stars from the past, or Betty Davis,
well,
whatever.
And Joan Crawford. Joan Crawford's
not
in
doing
there.
It, what? Pardon?
Joan Crawford's in there too.
And Joan Crawford and Rosalind Russell. I'm kind of a mix of everybody. But in my cabaret act, I'm not impressionist. I'm not doing impressionist. I'm just being myself. But just being the glamorous lady at the mic, it evokes in a way echoes of Judy Garland or Marlene Dietrich, or you know, just the classic lady at the microphone who's entertaining you.
Now, this may be coincidence, but
genre.
This may be coincidence, and you may or may not know this, but the show that will be going on at the Pride Arts Center around the time when you're there, in fact, you're performing on this set, is Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Did you know that?
Yes, I did know that. One of my closest friends is a wonderful actor, Tony Sheldon, who created the role. I forget the character's name, the transgender woman.
Yeah,
in
Priscilla. Was it Beatrice? Bernice.
That role. Yes, Bernadette.
Bernadette.
And he created that role in Australia, and then played it in London, and then played it on Broadway. So I remember I went to see. That's why I actually met Tony, was when I saw Priscilla on Broadway. And we've become great friends, yeah. But he's not in it in Chicago.
No, but you'll be on the set of that show.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. It'd make me feel at home.
but appropriate.
Although I hope there's not a big bus on stage when I'm doing my act.
there could. Well, if there isn't, we can move one on for you. I mean, again, people don't know Priscilla. That is part of the set there. By the way, you also, you last year, you did a show called The Lady at the Mic at Lincoln Center. I'm just curious, was that, I mean, is this an incarnation of some shows you've been doing lately? Is this a brand new show? What flavor of music are we going to get throughout this show?
Well, the shows that I usually do in cabaret and what I will be doing in Chicago is a potpourri of different songs, just songs that appeal to me, that emotionally and that are fun, and then I link it with just stories of my experiences on the road or growing up, what the songs inspire.
Right.
The Lady at the Mic was a show at Lincoln Center, and it was our first theme show.
Yeah, so, you did songs from the American Songbook.
It wasn't just kind of an evening of variety. It was there was a theme of that we were paying tribute to a certain group of ladies of New York nightlife who are friends of mine who had died, and so I sang songs and told stories about my relationships to them. But that's not what we'll be doing in Chicago. This is more our regular show that we do, which is a mixture of songs from different periods and just stories about about me.
and one of the things, I see it in the films that you've done, and you and I met once at a party years ago, but, there was a review I read of you, and I almost want to point this out because I think it says so much about who you are. It says, and I'm just going to read from it, from Jason Fitzgerald, it says, launching into I Wonder What Became of Me, he chills the room in a blink, ringing wrenching poignancy where there was once bawdy stories. It sounds like in the great tradition of, I'm not making this connection except in my mind, Jackie Gleason, Nathan Lane, people who have the ability to make us laugh and then bring us to a dramatic moment on the turn of a dime, you've got that skill. That's a very rare skill.
Well, I love it. I just love doing that. As an audience member, I like, as I said, a roller coaster of tone. I get a little bored sometimes when things are all just on the same level, whether it's all just raucous comedy or just depressing songs. So I like mixing it up, and it's a challenge taking an audience with you, because an audience it's a delicate thing, and you can give the wrong cue to an audience, and they'll start, not know that you're suddenly taking that switch and going dramatic,
yeah.
They could very easily think that you're spoofing the dramatic moment, and then they want to laugh, and you have to really be careful and think about what you're where you're guiding them, where you're guiding the audience. You're like a tour guide, and you can't take a turn and lose your crowd. So So no, it's an interesting thing. I've really had to learn that too. I had an instinct for it, but I had to really refine that because there were a couple times with an audience who's accustomed to seeing me parodying old movies. That you know, if I sing an old song from the 30s, you know, they could very well think, oh, he's goofing on this. He's satirizing, you know, an old torch singer for comic effect. But I'm at that moment, I may be actually trying to really just be very honest with you and share an emotion.
I think
you have to it's a tightrope that you have to be very careful how you walk it because it's easy to fall off.
In the intimate setting that I think we're going to see you here in Chicago on the 29th and 30th of January, I think people will get, they won't make that mistake, and they'll get. I do have to ask you this, because actually when you are in drag, you're a beautiful woman, I got to tell you, when you set that up. Do you ever have people, and I mean this in a positive way, I want to say hecklers from the audience, but not a negative way. I mean just people who just are so crazy about you or so whatever, they just kind of yell things out at you and whatever. Do you have that, or do you keep them under control?
Not very often. You know, once in a great while, you know, just people get carried away in a cabaret setting, you know, where they're drinking. But, you know, they're just
That's
being
right,
supportive. And I really have to say, you know, I've had very little problem with that. Thank God. You know, because that's another tightrope drift beyond. I learned when I was quite young, actually, that even if there's somebody in your audience who's being obnoxious, if the performer starts acting kind of angry and bitchy and all that, I tend to think that the audience, as annoyed as they are with the heckler, are still going to somehow identify with another audience member. And I just think that you have to be very careful because you could get kind of ugly and you know, turn off your audience thinking, ooh, you know, you don't want them thinking, oh dear, I wouldn't want to get on his bad side.
Right.
So, you know,
that can be dangerous.
You have to try to be very diplomatic. And if somebody is being intrusive and in their enthusiasm is just getting out of control, you know, you have to kind of try to tone them down, calm them down, but not come off like you're, you know, just this evil school teacher.
Now, see, that's why TV is easier. They can only get to me through email, you know. They're not right there.
It's a tricky thing. No, I learned that really early on in my career that you just you may be really annoyed, but you just, at least for me, you know, I mean, I think there are different, you know, if you're like an insult comic, if you're Don Rickles or, you know, or somebody
right.
like that, and you're selling anger and comic rage, you know, or Lewis Black, you kind of want them just to absolutely, you know, go for the jugular, but that's not who I am at all.
Well, if you want to learn more about Charles Bush, you may already be a fan. That's why you're listening to this podcast. You probably are, but you can go to charlesbush.com, and Bush is spelled B-U-S-C-H. We should make that clear. Learn more about him or rent the movie Psycho Beach Party. Actually, now you probably just watch it on Netflix, right? Have it stream, right? Don't wait. Just stream it down.
Okay,
Psycho
yes,
Beach
I think
Party.
It's available.
And my favorite, Die, Mommy, Die. I probably watched that movie 100 times. It's just fantastic. I just love it. But most importantly, get your tickets to see Charles at the Pride Arts Center, January 29th and 30th. It's two performances only. It's going to sell out fast if it hasn't already. PrideFilmsAndPlays.com is the website. PrideFilmsAndPlays, all one word, .com, or 1-800-737-0984. I'll say that again, 800-737-0984. The show is Charles Bush, That Girl, That Boy. I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to chat with you after the show. I hope I get a chance to do that.
I hope so.
And welcome to Chicago. Try and bring good weather with you. Well, you know. Look where you're coming from. But
yeah, you never know. I mean, my God, it could be a big snowstorm.
I know the East Coast. But I know you're then heading out to bring your show to the West Coast. You'll have a fantastic time as you hit those the tropics of the United States. But we're very excited to get you on the 29th and 30th. PrideFilmsAndPlays.com, Charles Bush. You are an amazing talent. As far as I'm concerned, you're truly iconic and a legend, and I appreciate your time and chatting with me here. Thank you, Charles.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.